Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanaka Oberhuber, and my guest is Bob, I don't know if I can say your name properly, Trockney. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. So I would like to start with a question that I like to ask my guests. How did you come to see the world the way you do today?
I was reflecting on that question because you'd mentioned that you'd start the interview with that question. And I find it to be somewhat of a tricky question because the way I see the world today is no different really from the way I saw it from the very beginning, and no different either from the way most people see the world. And of course, there may be an expectation that speakers of non-duality are going to come up with some deeper understanding, some new profound vision of what things are. And yet I feel that that is a deep misunderstanding regarding what this is all about. What this is about is more a spontaneous letting go of the belief in the representations we have of what this is or of what this could be. So, of course, there always is someone who can or who does come up with an idea of what this is. And there is no way we can share this in words without expressing it in the form of words as an idea that we can understand and share. And yet, there is no special understanding here. So, as I said, the question is tricky, and yet it also is an invitation to share my personal story, how I became interested in this topic, where it led me, and how I would say disillusionment after disillusionment, I came to the point where I feel that I have no particular understanding to share, other than perhaps telling people that the additional understanding we all have is just that, an additional understanding, something we add, something we express, something we want to share. But the immediacy of what is not an experience that we can share. So it may seem odd to say that the immediacy of what is not an experience that can be shared. But what it means is that there is no need to share what need not be experienced, what need not be re-presented, re-expressed. And yet, when the sharing happens, it does happen through words. So that would be my answer to the question. Now, if I want to follow up with the other side of the question, meaning how did Bob Trockney come to talk about this, to write about this, to an interest in this, I can, of course, give you my personal story if that's of any interest to you or to the people who are listening to us.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. We have a lot of time ahead, so maybe a little story won't do any harm. In my early 20s, I was studying philosophy, and my brother John was a high school dropout and a junkie. And John and I were very close. I considered him my alter ego in a sense. He was very witty, very provocative, and very bright at the time. I say at the time because heroin had a very destructive effect on him in time. And one night, John and I were sitting in a hammock, talking. And we had no intention to whatsoever, to no conscious intention whatsoever to seek for truth. But for some reason, the conversation unfolded in that direction. And at one point during that conversation, John said in French, "Ce qui est ce que tu vois." What is what you see. And I stopped him and I said, "C'est la porte." That's the gate. "Say that again." And he repeated, "What is what you see." And at that moment, we merged. At least that's what we called it. We called it the fusion, the merging, meaning there was neither Bob nor John. And John, and neither Bob, and neither John, because I wouldn't say that we were negated by that experience. And that experience was immediately claimed as an awakening. Both John and I were, within seconds, saying that we were God's dream. That this was just a dream, and that the Creator, God, the Source, was dreaming us. And John and I both remained with that experience, or some experience in the wake of that awakening, for some time. And then the experience faded. And with it, the apparent understanding we had. And that's what triggered the search. So there was no search prior to that. I was studying philosophy. I had a passion for I would say, the intellectual side of, you know, of seeking the truth. But from there on, from that point onwards, there was a search, a seeking of a different nature. And the seeking was not so much a sense of not being fulfilled and wanting something that others perhaps had realized. That was not my case. I mean, it happens in many instances, but it was more like the desire to experience once again what I had experienced, stabilize in what I had experienced, remain there. And that's how the quest began. And so for many years, I sought, I read scriptures, philosophers. At the time, I was working on a thesis on Plotinus, a Neoplatonist mystic. I had a strong interest in Meister Eckhart as well. And none of that led me anywhere until one day where I came across an orange book in this bookstore, a very thick orange book. And that thick orange book attracted me because the title on it in French was Je suis, I am. Actually, it was Nisargadatta's I am that in French. And I like to mention this because if it hadn't been a thick orange book with a white title, Je suis, I never would have come across Nisargadatta. So that's the way life unfolds. You never know how things happen. And so I was instantly attracted to the book. I pulled it out of the bookshelf and started reading. And I said, wow, this is great stuff. So I took the book home, and it was on my bedstand for years with other books by Nisargadatta, or, you know, transcriptions of his dialogues with seekers. And one day, I was in Paris, living in Geneva at the time, and I didn't have Nisargadatta with me, and I was feeling kind of down, a little depressed. So I figured, maybe I should go to the FNAC. The FNAC is the big bookstore where I had initially found the orange book. Find a little Nisargadatta, and maybe I can find something, some instruction in there that I will apply absolutely as of now. So that was the idea that came up. So off I go to the FNAC, and no works of Nisargadatta on the bookshelf. So I look, and I come across a book by Ramesh Balsekar, his disciple, Pointers to Nisargadatta Maharaj. And I say, oh, well, maybe I can read this. And I start reading Ramesh's book. I sit down on the floor in the bookstore and read through. And a beautiful book. And there I am sitting there crying as I read Ramesh. People probably thought I was insane, but and I say, wow, this guy, Nisargadatta's dead, but this guy, he asked this guy to continue his teaching, and he seems to still be alive, so maybe I should contact Ramesh. So off I go. I buy a phone card, and I call Mumbai, ask for the number of Ramesh Balsekar, not knowing if there's, you know, one or 10,000 Ramesh Balsekars in Mumbai. They give me a number. I dial the number. And within, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, I'm on the phone with Ramesh. So that's why I like to tell the story. It's kind of a fun story. And so I tell him, listen, I've been reading Nisargadatta for years, and I understand that you're continuing his teaching. And he says, that is correct. And so he invites me to visit. So he asks, when can you come? I say, well, listen, I teach at the moment, but as soon as I have a break, I'll take the first flight to Mumbai to meet you. So to make a long story short, I end up in Ramesh's living room. And he always asks newcomers to give them an account of their story. How did they end up in his living room, basically? So I give him my story, and I summarize it saying that I've been looking for that experience ever since it first happened. And he looks at me and he says, you're telling me that for 15 or 20 years you've been trying to replicate an experience you had with your brother? I say, yes. He says, but that was just an experience. Have you not been neglecting all the other experiences, just looking for that one experience? In what was that experience any different from any other experience? And it was like, instantly, I had a similar experience to the one I'd been looking for years. What the hell? And so that experience once again faded within a few days. And when I left Mumbai, I wrote Ramesh a letter to thank him for his warm welcome and the time I'd spent there, saying that I was departing as I had come, empty and loveless, but thanking him nonetheless. And he was very gentle and very kind. And at the end of the session, there were people singing these bhajans, these, you know, traditional Indian songs. And he said, Bob, I want to translate these words for you. And the words were something like, in substance, I don't remember exactly what they were, but something like, why should I care about eternal truth? Why should I care about awakening? Why should I care about, and there was a list of the absolute, etc., if I can simply sit here with you? So a very, very loving disciple guru expression, and which was surprising because Ramesh was more of a, had more of an intellectual approach in his talks. And then he said, it will always be with you. And then as he stood up, he brushed my shoulder with his hand. And bingo, it happened again. I was sitting in the living room of this old retired banker in Mumbai. And there was nothing more to it than that, than sitting there and this kind old gentleman brushing my shoulder. There was nothing new. There was nothing more profound. There was no other realization than this is it. So I wouldn't say that my search came to an end at that point, but that was a big dent in seeking the final understanding, seeking the final experience, seeking liberation or whatever you want to call it. And the seeking went on for a number of years until it came to an end. But I often say that it's important in my case to say this, that it's not so much that the seeking came to an end because of exhaustion or, you know, because of endlessly knocking on a door that never opens. It's more like suddenly I realized that I wasn't a seeker of truth at all. What happened is, I would say, the realization that there is no seeker of truth. And when the seeker of truth vanishes altogether, so does the seeking, at least in the form that we imagined when we believed that we were a seeker of truth, with everything that implies in terms of our relation to others who, whom we imagine may have found the truth, or to others whom we imagine are not seekers of truth. The pride of being a seeker of truth in regard to those who aren't a seeker of truth, and the deference to those who perhaps have realized what we have not yet realized. And all those representations, all these imaginary ideas we have about what it means to awaken, what it means to seek awakening, what it means to be free. So at some point that just all faded. And to come back to your initial question, the way I see the world today is no different from the way I have always seen the world. And there is no deeper understanding here than anywhere else. I wouldn't even say that there's a deeper acceptance of what is. Simply, there is no seeker of truth. That has totally vanished. Including when I speak about this. I do my best, of course, to express it in terms that can be understood. But I wouldn't define it as a seeking. I would just say it's a spontaneous description which points to the immediacy of what is and cannot be expressed.
Yeah, this is a really beautiful description of how you came to see things, and then actually it turned out to be the same as before, right? Except the disappearance of the seeker, which is a significant point you've been making, right? Because I think that changes a lot. Because I think there's a lot of, in this seeker, there's a lot of this tension that you don't have what you need. You don't have everything. You're not perfect the way you are. The world isn't okay the way it is because you haven't found out whatever the secret is that person might have or doesn't have, right? And so I think there is a difference. And maybe you'd like to describe the difference from before that comes with the disappearance of the seeker.
Oops, having problems with the microphone. Yes, there is a difference. But again, the difference is in the way we express it, in the way we look at it. The difference is not in the immediacy of what cannot even be called an experience. As soon as you talk about an awakening experience, there is someone who claims it as an additional understanding. No matter how you cut it, there will always be the sense that something has been understood by someone. And someone may have the feeling that something that has been understood by someone has not been understood by them. Or someone may also have the feeling that, hey, what this guy understands kind of fits with what I believe I have understood. And so there may be an acknowledgement, a nodding, sounds right, feels right. So the difference you mention exists in the representation we have, in Bob's personal story and in the account that Bob can give of his personal story. there is a before and there is an after. And yet, in reality, both the before and the after are but a representation in relation to a now that evades understanding. So I can pinpoint a time, a moment where in my story, things shifted. And as you know, there are many people who talk about the shift. And yet, just a second, I'll let the cat out because we're going to have him otherwise throughout the whole session.
Jean-François, you wanted to share something? Maybe we'll let Jean-François share what he wanted to share.
Sure, sure.
Go ahead.
Hello. Monaco? Yes. How are you? Hello, Bob.
Salut.
Salut. So I'm French and my English is not terrible. I try to speak English, but it's difficult for me sometimes to express what I want to express in English. I want to talk. I have not all understand what you said before, so never mind. What I want to talk, it's about the understanding of Course in Miracles. My question is always the same. Do I have to, understand the Course in Miracles to have the experience? Or do I have the experience in order to understand the Course of Miracles? It's the question of, chicken and eggs. You know, it's always the same thing. It's surely a question of ego. But, and I don't know if we can really answer to this question. And I know, you know, I search the verity in a lot of group. And so I have not no audience. I think, you know, in my life, without talking a Course of Miracles, I have in English, Wanako, j'ai noté, j'ai remarqué. In English, I noticed. Thank you very much. I noticed that, for example, I'm a teacher of accounting, and in fact, it was when I practice accounting that I can teach. Before a teacher, I'm an accountant, and it's when I have a practice accounting, I'm feeling I have the maîtrise of accounting, but so I can teach to a student. So if I do the same reasonment with spirituality, I think that it's the second solution. So I have to. What does it mean? It means that you have to read the Course of Miracles without understanding at the beginning. And I think unconsciously, it makes, you know, in your mind, it work in your mind. And when you have the experience of real world, you can understand the Course in Miracles, and you can teach the Course of Miracles. Yeah, it's what I say. What when I call the last time, and you are not agree, but I think that until we have not the experience of real world, we can be sure that we are in a dream. We are not completely convinced by that. We can admit in the mind, but in until we have not the experience of real world, we are not convinced. And I think that practice lesson, practice moment present, before. I'm confused. In fact, I think that we have to do lesson, and after we understanding. I think it's a second solution. And in France, many teacher try to explain the Course in Miracles, and I'm not sure they have the experience of that. And in fact, you know, in Course in Miracles, you have a part about explain ego. It's impossible, in fact. And a lot of teachers do the mistake, I think. In US, you know, when I go in Joining Light, we have a practice more, I don't know in English, pragmatic, in French, pragmatic, more, you know, pragmatic. I can translate if you want. In English,
c'est le même mot.
Ah yes, pragmatic. Okay, they are. Thank you. They are much more pragmatic, and they don't care about the story. And they see only the desire under the level of awareness. Yes, and to release this desire in order to get a miracle. It's the first thing I share with you. And the second thing is I talk with a lot of people how to hear Jesus, because the experience is that to hear Jesus and to practice the holy relationship. And before I talk with Lisbeth, I don't know if you know Monaco in Joining Light. And
Sean?
Yeah.
Please don't use any names that people could recognize for now. And we will attempt to answer your question as best we know how. Maybe you'd like to pause for a moment and then respond when we've responded. Would that be okay?
Okay. I can make the
Okay. So, A Course in Miracles. Yeah. In A Course in Miracles, it says basically the same things that Bob was speaking of in a different language, in a different use of the language. The truth is always the truth, and you can't change it. So there's nothing that ever changes. Bob was saying that. Nothing changed. It was just his perception, his view of things changed, right? So I don't know. Maybe you want to respond to that, Bob.
Okay. I'm not very familiar with the Course of Miracles. I know of the book. It's very famous, but I've never read it. So I wouldn't dare answer the question directly in relation to that particular book or teaching. But I'm very familiar with the chicken and the egg, or is it the egg and the chicken? And the chicken and the egg, leading to the egg and the chicken, is the way representation works. Meaning, the minute you come up with some kind of determination, some kind of understanding, thought will spontaneously come up with the echoing representation. And whatever that may be, I mean, there are many examples. If you say being, well, if you remain in being as beingness, you will immediately imagine non-being. And if you come up with one specific being, for instance, I am, it will only exist or stand out against what it is not, against the background of what it is not. So, in naming things, you trigger a thought process that is infinite in a sense, or never ending. And that's the way thought works. It attempts to grasp something only to immediately realize that what it is trying to hold, what it is trying to grasp, is somehow liquid, like water flowing through a closed fist. Once that is seen and understood, then perhaps we can reconsider the whole form of questioning. Am I to, or more accurately perhaps, question our desire to hold on to something final that will give us the final understanding we seek. And perhaps then we can understand that the seeking is but the echo of the seeker we believe we are. I am the seeker of truth is what sets me apart from the truth I seek. And so, whichever way we want to cut it, with whichever way we want to look at it, we will always be in the duality of the chicken and the egg in thought, if we consider thought as something that will give us a final understanding of what is. There is no such thing as a final understanding of what is, which is why thought just goes on and on and on. And we need not have an issue with thought going on and on and on, as if we were to say, oh, I understand that thought goes on and on and on, and I would like to stop thinking to finally, which would be just the same thing as thought going on and on and on. Therefore, the desire to grasp or the desire to stop grasping are somewhat similar in nature. They're both a desire to grasp. And there's no way you can let go of the desire to grasp. Je ne sais pas si tu me suis dans ces propos en anglais. Je t'invite, si tu le souhaites, à me contacter ailleurs et on pourra en parler davantage. Mais en français, si c'est plus simple pour toi.
Yeah, I think this is a very important thing to talk about. And A Course in Miracles is basically saying the same things in other words, just so that we understand this. It's speaking about how drop the whole course, drop the whole book, and come to God as you are, to come to the world as you are. So it also drops, it also speaks of that the seeker drops away. Right, so I think there's a lot in common about, and I think what you're saying is in other words, and I think they're very beautiful words and easy to understand. So thank you also for sharing your story so that we can have a feeling how it plays out in the idea of what a human being is, right? Yeah, so Jean-François, you would like to say something else then? I will let you. Here we go. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oui, j'ai pas. Bob, si tu parles français, ce sera plus simple. Oui, effectivement. Non, j'ai pas tout compris. J'ai pas tout compris dans ce que tu as dit en anglais là. J'ai compris que tu parlais de poule et d'œufs, mais après, non, j'ai pas tout. J'ai pas compris, pour être honnête.
Okay, then it looks like Bob's offer to speak with you in French later on is a great offer.
Yeah.
Écoute, si tu veux, tu as Facebook, tu me cherches sur Facebook, Bob Trocmé, T-R-O-C-M-E. Je ne sais pas s'il y a l'accent dans Facebook, mais bon, il n'y a pas d'autre Bob Trocmé que moi, et puis on peut continuer cette conversation en français, ça sera peut-être plus sympa. Plus clair, en tout cas, pour toi.
Okay, then let's continue with our conversation. And I think it's beautiful that we've got this inter-language connection here. It's very nice. but I don't think that there's... I don't know how many people are just as fluent in both languages as we are, all three of the three of us who were talking. So why don't we look at this whole, I think what Jean-François was bringing up a very important issue. When are you ready to teach was his question, I guess, if you would like to use many of the words he was using. Now, I personally got the message that teaching means coming from where you are now, and it doesn't matter where that is, right? It's just coming from where you are now, because that's honest, that's clear, and that's fair, right? There's nothing, you're not saying you're better than anyone, you're less good, or just who you are at this moment, the way you experience it, the way you talk about things. I don't know if you have a different take on that, Bob.
Okay. I have a little bit of an issue with the notion of teaching. Teaching does suggest that there is something that you know that others do not know or do not fully master, and that you have the capacity of enlightening them with regard to what you have understood. Now, when it is seen that all understanding is apparent, that all understanding is, I would say, an additional representation, which points to something that it can never fully hold or contain, then the whole idea of teaching is somewhat challenged by that understanding. So I would say that I have nothing to teach because there's nothing I know that others do not know with regard, of course, to spirituality. If I were to teach Plato's works or Aristotle or Plotinus or human rights, or I would have a subject to teach, something that, you know, I've read, understood, and that I can perhaps share or communicate to others who don't have the experience or the understanding I have. But when it comes to the immediacy of what cannot be understood, the immediacy, I would say, of unknowing. And perhaps here I should add something more specific. It is not that I know that I do not know this, because that would also be an understanding or a knowing. It would be saying, this is unknowable, and I know that it is unknowable, therefore it cannot be taught. That's not exactly what I'm saying. That's not exactly what I'm pointing to. Unknowing is not the knowing that this cannot be known. Unknowing is not a knowing at all. There is no experience of unknowing. If unknowing becomes an understanding or an experience, it becomes a knowing. So it is not that this is not known, but it is not either that this is known. Both not knowing this and knowing this are a lot closer and perhaps even identical in a sense than we imagine. Unknowing is not a position I take in relation to something else, as a subject in relation to an object. So it would not be fair to say that I know nothing, and it would not be fair either to say that I know. Neither are true, which leaves us a bit in a difficult situation. The immediacy these words point to is not something that can be missed. The immediacy of what these words point to is not something that can be found. This is neither missed, nor is it found. If it were missed, it wouldn't be immediacy. If it were found, it wouldn't be immediacy. And yet, it is also missed and also found, because we don't want to exclude the sense that this is missed or the sense that this is found from immediacy. To come back to what I was saying about the shift is a personal experience, the sense that something happened to me, some clarity was bestowed upon me at one point in time. And it's always a beautiful experience. Awakening in its multiple forms, in its multiple occurrences or unique occurrence in the life of someone, is always a beautiful occurrence. And yet, it is also the claim that something has happened to me. I have no issue with that claim. I simply invite people to see it for what it is. It's a personal experience, and it's a lovely personal experience. But that's all it is. And wanting to maintain it through time, wanting to always be in the joy of that finding, in the joy that comes actually from the contrast of searching, 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 not knowing, and suddenly, that desire is what keeps the seeking going. It's what keeps the seeking going because you have the feeling that you have experienced something, that something has finally happened to you, and that unavoidably will fade. Unavoidably. And there's no need to hang on to it. But there is no way you can decide to stop the seeking. There is no way you can let go of the seeking, because as long as you believe that you are a seeker of truth, the seeking just goes on until it stops, until it doesn't.
Very beautifully put. I think, you know, in A Course in Miracles, it says, for instance, it's not there to teach love because love is who you are, right? It can only assist you in allowing yourself to see it, right? To remember who you are, right? So there's no, so I think that's beautiful. You were also saying it, you can't say you're not a teacher, but you can't say you are a teacher. You are both, right? And of course, Miracles also says you're teacher and student at the same time. There's no big difference in the two, right? Maybe at a given moment you have something to give, and at another moment you have something to receive, or you're doing both at the same time. Also says giving is receiving, or giving is having. So there's a lot of references to this two-sided thing that you were sharing about. But both are, the experience is beyond the duality, so to speak, in other words.
Yes, I often say that this is unavoidable. Sitting here, talking to you, seeing your face on my computer and my face on my computer, this whole appearance is unavoidable. And then I often say that it is unreachable. And then I add that the unavoidable is the unreachable. And the unreachable is the unavoidable. And there's nothing and no one in between. Nothing and no one in between but imagined. I, as seeing this as unavoidable, I, as seeing this as unreachable, that's what is imagined in between, and that too is unavoidable and unreachable, whichever way we want to cut it. You mentioned love. There's no way we can access love. There's no gateway to love. Simply because the gateway to love is love. Love is a complete mystery, but to love itself. Only love knows what love is, but not as something understood, not as something known as love. So love is complete. Love knows nothing, nothing at all, but love. That's all love knows. Love knows itself, and in knowing itself, it knows nothing else. So yes, love is the answer to the question that needs no answer.
Yeah, very, very beautiful. And as you could be directly out of A Course in Miracles, just that you're using other words, but it's really basically the same message. So I think it's a really beautiful thing to simply speak, right? And be where you are, and your experience of the dropping of the seeker, and another person has the experience of having the seeker and being fully in that. And one can speak from there too, because like you said, it's all equally valuable. You can't say that before or after you were better or worse, right? You continue to be, and there's no discussion about that. Yeah, I think that's really significant that it's, and you can't change it, right? It's the way it is now. And when it shifts, but it still is the way it is now. That saying it is the way it is now is still true. That's the way I experience it right now. And I think it's beautiful to speak about this, that words can never describe the presence, the immediacy, the now. And yet, because we all know what it is, we can speak about it, right? In truth, everyone knows. It's nothing new. It's nothing you have a patent on or someone else has a patent on. It simply is something that is common knowledge. And yet it's so important to speak about, which is also fascinating. Why is it so important to speak about something that everyone knows, right? And why is it so liberating and so freeing? Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yes. It is forever new and yet ancient. It is discovered and yet it was never lost. So there's nothing much to say about it, and outside of love, which is what we are in fact pointing to, there's nothing much to say. As we well know, when we hold the hand of a dying friend, which happened to me just a few days ago, there's nothing much to say. And yet it must be said one last time. So there's this obviousness of love, this obviousness that can't be avoided, and this obviousness that can never be reached. It leaves us sort of hanging there. And it's truly beautiful.
Something that I found very significant is that your description of this connectedness was always in connection with another human being, with your brother, with I don't remember his name, Rakshmi, I think, Ramesh, and so on. There was always another, there was a connection involved, something where one experienced that there was no separation, even though in the visual and that you were describing, there appeared to be a separation, two bodies or three bodies or whatever, right? But the experience was something totally different that went beyond what was visually there or auditorily there, whatever other senses were involved. I think you were describing that also when holding your friend's hand, right? That there was a connection, and that is expressed. And part of the expression in the experience you were having is words. And it's so beautiful. And I think that's another thing that I love about A Course in Miracles. It's all about the connection. The whole book came about because of two people who decided they wanted to find another way. Another way in meaning to there was all this fighting and all these discrepancies in a group, and they wanted to find another way. One in which there was a different way, a connection, right? And so I think that's really fascinating. And I think that's part of the journey of allowing the speaker to fall away, as you described it, I guess, is the connection that allows that to drop away. Even if you can't determine when that will happen or if that will happen in a conscious way or not, right? It, when the time's there or when it's not there, it happens.
Actually, it doesn't really matter if it happens or not, because as I often say, in an attempt to bring together the unavoidable and the unreachable, I was pointing to earlier as being one and the same. I often say there can be no parting for those who have never met. Those who have never met are this appearance. We are not this appearance. And therefore, where we meet is where we have never parted. So, holding my friend Philippe's hand was saying we have never parted and we have never met. The story of Bob and Philippe's friendship is but an appearance. And the love that holds them together is where they have never parted. And yet at the same time, we can also say that there is a meeting, and that if there wasn't this appearance, then the no parting would never be known, which is why it's so important to be together in this world where we are different and where we can hold hands, where we can hug, where we can talk, where we can embrace. So the meeting and the non-parting are one and the same. They're the chicken and the egg, or the egg and the chicken. They come together. And one leads to the other, and the other leads to the one. And the circle is complete, in what we were mentioning earlier, in love that knows nothing but love. Love has no face, and yet all the faces are love. No face contains every single face. Every single face. Is held in that love. I'm a little emotional because I'm thinking of my good old friend Philippe, who died a few days ago. But it is true always. Of course, those circumstances bring it to light. And it was truly a beautiful departure.
Another thing that I think is really fascinating about these joining, that when it comes to language, it usually becomes very poetic when one speaks of these things. And I think that's also very interesting about A Course in Miracles, because it's also written in iambic pentameter, like the Shakespeare plays and stuff. So it's really interesting how when one speaks of this, that it can become very poetic when it comes to language. And I think that has to do also with the having a rhythm, a music. It's beyond words. So it has something else as well. It shows that there's more to it than just the words, I think.
Yes, it takes so many forms, and the poetic expression is beautiful. And sometimes you just shift from one to the other. You're in the, I would say, the more rational reasoning aspect. You know, the building blocks of understanding, unfolding, and then suddenly this light shines through in this very poetic phrase, just holds it all together. And it's not something you can plan. I remember when I used to teach, I'd sometimes crack a great joke in front of a class. And then next class, or class after next, I'd be at the same point in the lecture I was giving, and it was the time for the joke. And I'd come up with the joke and it would fall flat. So the first time the whole class was roaring with laughter, and the second time it was like, what the fuck is he saying? You know? So you never know. You never know where it comes from. And it's not something you can imitate. Nor is it something you can teach. And the sharing is always a blessing. For everyone. For the speaker and for the people who are listening. Actually, there is no speaker separate from the people who are listening. They happen together. One of the first things I told my brother after the initial experience I mentioned earlier is that I thought I was the student in philosophy and that he was the high school dropout. I loved him dearly, but nonetheless, there was that, you know. And when we had that conversation, it was neither Bob with his so-called knowledge or John who were speaking. It just happened. and there was no speaker and there was no listener. Or maybe we could say that they were echoing one another, and that in that echoing of one another, the merging happened. The merging was simply what I was saying earlier when I said there can be no parting for those who have never met. It's just a way of pointing to it. And yet, if we had not been sitting in that hammock smoking pot, it probably wouldn't have happened either. So we had to be two for this oneness to happen. We had to be two for not two to happen. And that's always true. In every instance, it's true.
Yeah, it's a very moving thing. You were saying you're moved because of what you experienced recently, but I think it's moving in its totality because of the depths to which we human beings, as human beings, can experience things, and how you can get a very different view of what things are or seem to be, depending on the state of joining, right? So you were describing it as using a totally different language and coming from a very different understanding of things. And when it faded away, the understanding changed, or the idea of what you had to say about things changed. And so I think it's very important to value that. Value that, yes, it shows that actually there's something more there. It's not like even just the fact that the state in which you are changes your language or the way you express yourself is also already a very fascinating discovery that we're not the first to know about. I've read about it in books or heard about it in lectures. But yes, it's a really fascinating thing to become aware of.
Yes, again, it's beautiful to talk about this. And there is no reason to dismiss the apparent understanding that occurs when we do, as if to say it's only apparent understanding and therefore it is of little importance with regard to the immediacy it is pointing to. That would be to say that apparent understanding should be something else than apparent understanding. And apparent understanding is perfectly apparent understanding, and it's perfectly okay. And that's what understanding is. And sharing that understanding, that apparent understanding, is beautiful. And of course, there is also the understanding that it's apparent, and that what it points to or what it grasps is ungraspable. I sometimes say, you know, because in non-duality circles, there's this idea of no self, of the end of self. And then, of course, comes the question, well, who the hell is to benefit of the end of self if there's no self left? And who the hell is talking if there is no self? All these, you know, redundant questions and discussions we have in those circles. Those who claim this and those who claim that. And to settle that quarrel, I often say that the end of self or the death of self is but a concept without the end of the end of self. And that's where it all happens. Because here we are as an appearance. And what do we gain by dismissing it as an appearance? Nothing at all. Who can stand aloof in the understanding that this is an appearance? No one. And so it's perhaps best to say this is a beautiful appearance. And to be engulfed by that beauty, to be engulfed by that uncompromising love, it doesn't happen all the time. And let's not pretend we're, you know, we've reached that stage where no self and self have merged in eternal love. We haven't reached anything. But it certainly comes in unexpectedly and beautifully and miraculously. Sweeps us off our feet. Isn't that beautiful, to be swept off your feet? I mean, imagine being in a place where everything is known and everything is understood. How boring. How boring. How boring that would be. So I think we're very, very fortunate to be completely ignorant.
Yeah, there's parallels in A Course in Miracles to this as well. So. I'm so happy that I don't know what is best for me. For instance, some people like to say that when they refer to certain quotes from A Course in Miracles, we can be so happy we don't know what is best for us. It's there. Yeah, the answers come from within, and we don't know what they'll be in advance. There's no way. It's now. The knowing is now and not somewhere in the future, in the past. And I think that the beauty of this sharing is, and I like what I think is also beautiful, there's a commonality in this happiness, this when people start sharing about this experience of the now, how this happiness bubbles up. And it also enables people to go through things. I mean, when there's really hardships or things that appear to be hard and difficult, nonetheless, when they're in this, recognizing the present moment, people tend to speak differently about it. There's a different perspective on it. Suddenly they start seeing the beauty in it, the joy, the amazing depth to which it goes. And what I also have noticed is this use of superlatives, you know, using words that make it even stronger expression of how beautiful, how joyful, how marvelous, how wonderful it is to not want to know, and yet know that all is fine the way it is, like you were expressing as well. You know, it's okay. The way it is okay, even if it appears one way and may not be true, and you know it's not true that way, and nonetheless it is your experience. Why fight it? Just be with the experience you're having it, and take whatever you get from it, and live with that. You know, allow it to be. I think that's one of the, that's amazingly powerful. And yes, we are all going up, having ups and downs and this and that and so on. And that doesn't take away from the sharing, the power of sharing your experience.
Yes, there would be no joy without sadness, and there would be no sadness without joy. They follow one another, and sometimes they even happen together. The deep joy of the deepest sadness, the deepest sadness of the greatest joy. This is not where we reside. This is not where we live. And yet, there is nowhere else where we could be or we would want to be. I am where I am not. I meet you where I cannot find you. You are that love with no face. And yet I love your face. To the point where your face can be everything to me. Everything. Not everything is a sum of everything. But every single thing, every single face is everything in love. So, of course, we can throw love out of the window in words. We can have a very dry approach of non-duality. Love is just an emotion, but those are only words. At the end of the day, the only place we all meet is in love. And it's certainly not the privilege of people who know what they're, or think they know what they're talking about when they talk about non-duality. No. So, of course, I mean, you know, some gurus will use that thread to, you know, preach love and have thousands of followers. It's there's the ill side of it in one sense, because it's easy to catch attention when you preach love. But so there has to be some rigor, I would say, because it's a catch-all word in a sense also, you know what I mean? But that's just because it's a word. It's a catch-all word. But the feeling of lostness, being lost and found, is shared by all.
Yes, this is so beautiful to recognize that there is nothing that separates us. Even though words seem to separate, you can use them to join. Because words in themselves are not the communication that is taking place beyond those words. But they are part of the joining us. And one of the Course of Miracles says, for instance, the only purpose of the body, so in other words, of the world, is communication, because communication reminds us, brings us back home to being one with one another. It reminds us of who we actually are. So we're actually, by communicating, reminding each other that we already are one. So I think that's really, really powerful what you're sharing here.
I'm somehow left speechless.
I use this as a beautiful final note. We are left speechless.
I think, yes, that we've covered the uncoverable topic in lovely ways that have enabled us to meet one another. And I very much enjoyed this this conversation, and I want to thank you for the invitation. It was a beautiful occurrence. It was really nice. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and I'd like to thank everyone who's joining us, whether right now. Well, it's always right now, so thank you for joining us. Please let people know about the podcast, review it, and share about it, because there's a lot of conversations here to listen to. And today's conversation is the episode 150. So just to get an idea that there's a lot there. And if you feel like joining me in a conversation, please let me know and contact me, because this podcast is there to share the message of love, let's put it in this way, of speechlessness, maybe in this case, with a lot of words, though.
Yeah. Speechless blah blah is what this is all about.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. So, if anyone wants to reach you and speak about the unspeakable with you, how could they do that?
Just look me up on Facebook. Bob Trocmé on Facebook. BOBTROCME. And I'll gladly talk to anyone who wants to, you know, interact. But again, I know nothing and I have nothing to teach. It's important.
Yeah, we all are teaching.
I don't even know that I know nothing. Beware.
if we're teaching, we're all teaching. And let's put it with the quote from A Course in Miracles, we're walking each other home. Okay. It's not one or the other who's leading or whatever. We're walking each other home. We're joining this. So once again, thank you, Bob. And thank you, everyone. Blessings to you all. And till next time.
Ciao.